Harlots of History contains explicit language, overt sexual themes, and discussion of sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Harlots of History, a show by women for everyone, except children and pets, including our own. This show was created by our love of the shadier, inventive, and bold women, men, and non-binary humans that you cannot find in the history books.
We will be exploring and educating ourselves, and hopefully our listeners, on infamous mistresses, lovers, sex workers, courtesans, madams, vamps, sirens, and of course, harlots. We will delve into their pasts, sordid or honorable, discussing the era that they happened to live in and the problems of the times.
Be ready for some controversial figures. You may be surprised at how many harlots in history you end up loving or at least begrudgingly respect.
So sit back, grab a fizzy drink, some salty snacks, and have some fun listening to Harlots of History, taking back the word harlot one episode at a time. Welcome to Harlots of History. I'm Emily, and I'm an out-of-work bartender who likes to adopt cats.
And dogs.
And dogs. Just dog. And Highland cows.
A future adopter of Highland cows.
You don't know. You don't know. I moved to Colorado. Why do you think I moved out here?
My name is Cara Mia, and I still get butterflies like every time we do this intro.
Oh, me too. I forget my name.
I feel like everyone's eyes on me.
It's just my eyes. And they're staring at you lovingly.
That might be why I'm blushing.
I'm anxiously tearing up my napkin over here.
Oh, everyone. Emily got a Harry Potter coloring book to use while I was doing my episodes, just so she would like have something to do. She could have just gotten a fidget ring, but no.
I did. And I keep forgetting that it exists. Like, I got it like a month ago, and it's after we did one episode, and I was tearing up the foil from my sparkling wine bottle, and Matt walked in and he was like, "Were you anxious during this episode? Because the foil was in like 30 different small pieces." Tell us about yourself.
My name's Cara Mia. I have 3 children and 1 fish and a couple of half alive plant babies.
Wow.
I have some really good leftovers in the fridge. I made a really good Cajun dish last night that I'm very proud of.
Ooh, that's very relevant for our episode.
I know, but I wasn't even realizing why I was thinking that way. But I don't know. I always feel like really wealthy when I have like a lot of really good leftovers in my fridge.
I do too. When I look in my fridge and it's full, because there was a time when I was 21 where literally I had never had anything in my fridge, not even water. I would go to the store every day and have a Pop-Tart in the morning. I get a Pop-Tart and then I come home from work and I'd stop at the same gas station and get like a beer or a bottle of wine. And then like the gas station guy, one time I went in the morning and he's like, "No wine today?" I was like, "Dude, it's 10 o'clock. I'll see you in a couple hours."
See, I mean, at least you were taking care of yourself. Like when I was 21 and living in Seattle, I just like depended on other people to feed me. And if other people didn't feed me, I didn't eat.
I know. And I used to make you food all the time because by that point I was 23 and I like knew how to make food.
Right. Emily makes the best chicken and dumplings and jalapeno mac and cheese.
Ooh, yeah. I made her jalapeno mac and cheese to try to get her first baby out.
It didn't work, but it made me forever love her jalapeno mac and cheese.
That's the only time I've actually ever made jalapeno mac and cheese.
No, you've made it a couple other times for me, but you added it like the jalapenos like after, or you just added like a ton of red pepper flakes because you felt bad that it wasn't spicy enough.
I know. It's because I always take the seeds out. Oh, I want some mac and cheese. That sounds so good. We've been doing like vegan diet lately, and I haven't been eating. I have a bunch of like Brazilian cheese bread that I cooked yesterday that I've just been slowly snacking on. The Brazzy Bites, they're so good. I always have them in my freezer.
And you're always like, "I need to pause. I need to go get some of these bites."
Well, and I was like, I need to make some so I don't have to go like turn on the oven while Matt's sleeping and make them. And then also like during our episodes too, I always want a couple. So I just made a bunch of them yesterday. So I have like 2 left.
Nice.
All right.
Well, let's get into it. I'm like so excited. So do you want to tell, this is the 3rd installment, right?
It's the first. We've recorded a lot of our episodes out of order. It's the first in spooky September.
A spooky September.
Well, spooky September and October, but this episode will air in September. We're doing 6 weeks of spooky.
6 weeks of spooky starting in September and ending in October. Okay.
Yeah, spooky Halloween, fall. Spooky holidays. Oh, yeah. But you have to say it with a spooky voice.
You can do mine for me.
I will do no such thing.
I get a sound bite.
Okay. Yeah, so we think that Halloween should last all fall long.
I mean,
except for the first 2 weeks in September.
All year long, almost. No, 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 you're right. We do need a good chunk of fall because as a Michigan girl, I really adore my fall because August is usually like so humid that fall is just such a welcome relief.
I know. It's out here. It sucks because September is always really hot. It's always like 90 degrees all throughout September. And then it snows in October.
You don't get a fall. Oh, that's so sad. I don't know why I laugh.
No, it's like a 2 week fall, and I'm like kind of bummed because Seattle falls are like 2 months long, and fall is my favorite time of year. Well, I don't remember what Colorado falls are like because it's been like 13 years since I've been out here for fall.
Right.
I mean, I think they're pretty. No,
you're
they are. They're
out.
Pretty. Yes. Okay, so we are talking about Marie Laveau, and I have to tell you, I want to go to New Orleans so bad, and we have to go on a trip as soon as we can.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I want to go so bad. I just want to go
there and eat.
Oh my God. I know. And I told Matt, I was like, I want to go. And he's like, yeah, me too. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I want to eat beignets. And he's like, me too. I was like, you know, those aren't vegan. You have to not eat them. He's like, well, then I won't. I was like, well, then I want to go with you.
Right. Matt will be like, no, I'm not going to go try all this amazing fried chicken and all these amazing desserts and beignets and these beautiful rice dishes. And
I know. I'm sure they have a lot of good vegan food there, though, too.
They actually, they do. I actually read like a huge article about a vegan restaurant there. So you guys could go to the one vegan restaurant that I know.
I of course haven't adopted it completely, but I actually like it. I've been looking up a lot of recipes. Like there's a lot of really good recipes. The only thing that kind of sucks is that he's allergic to soy. So all of the like fake vegan, like all the fake meat is made of soy. Mm-hmm. So that limits it a lot. All right.
Hey, Marie Laveau. Woohoo.
All right. Sorry. No, no vegan talk. Okay, so Marie Laveau is also known as the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans. Before I begin, I just want to say that like most of my episodes, the details on Marie Laveau are pretty fuzzy. And this is actually true of this way more than other ones. Mm-hmm. So I did the best I can. She's been surrounded by so much myth and legend, it's difficult to go back 200 years and try to pull out pieces of that truth from a story that became a legend influenced by white supremacy, racism, slavery, patriarchy, exoticism, and othering, like a lot of stories.
And also, wasn't like a lot of her history pretty much like told orally for a while? Like a lot of the legends and stories about her, they were passed around orally for a while.
There were a lot of rumors and stuff. Like, I know her, like, the New York Times, I believe it was the New York Times, published her obituary.
That's so cool. Then,
but I think, yeah, I know. I think, like, while she was alive, though, there's a lot of rumors, and we'll get into it, but there's a lot of rumors, too, and also about voodoo, especially, and we will get into all of that. But, yeah, so I'm going to go off of what was most common, and I will tell you if there are certain details that vary greatly between sources, because there's some that, like, half the sources say one thing, the other half say the other.
Yay, those ones are so fun.
So pretty much just take what I'm telling you with a grain of salt. and I use my best judgment on what I believe. I listened to a couple podcasts, too, and, like, tried to go off, you know.
I mean, honestly, also, a podcast is pretty much someone editorializing something. So
right. Well, yeah. Based my research on like if they were kind of researching the same thing. And obviously like I found a lot of similarities between the two and between the ones I was researching. And I, of course, use my own discretion on a lot of it too. But if you are listening and I don't include something or you know that I did something wrong, especially when it comes to voodoo, I really tried to do a lot of research on this. But as I didn't talk directly to anyone that practices voodoo. So there's anything that anyone's listening that I'm saying wrong or doing wrong, like, please let us know.
And that honestly goes with everything.
Yes.
Emily and I are not of the mindset where we aren't flexible to change and other opinions mm-hmm. and learning. We're very flexible.
We are.
Not physically. We aren't flexible physically.
Well, I used to be a dancer, so I can still sometimes do half a split. Oh, and this is an exciting episode because Karami and I separately both made vodka cocktails, which is very rare for us. We neither of us like ever drink vodka.
Never.
I know. And yours sounds really good. And mine's halfway gone already.
Yeah, mine too. We better start recording officially. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So most of the dates vary, but dates aren't too important as we will have a general time period that we're going to go off of, and exact years don't really matter, you know? So I just want to warn you, we are also going to go down a couple deep dives and some shallow dives into some other topics. And I believe that they're important, especially when I talk about voodoo. So are you ready?
I am. I'm so excited.
I'm really excited too. Marie Laveau was born on some date at some time at the turn of the 19th century. Accounts of her birth year vary greatly between sources, but most sources seem to agree that she was either born in 1794 or 1801. And almost all of them cite September 10th as her birthday. So I think that the 1801 is kind of the more common one. Marie was born a free woman of color in the Vieux Carré, or the French Quarter of New Orleans. At the time of her birth, Louisiana was still under French and or Spanish rule. I think at the time it was actually under Spanish. The French and the Spanish were like constantly trading it back and forth. The Louisiana Purchase happened in 1803. So right before that happened, Napoleon like bought it back from the French and or Spanish and then sold it. So her parents were Charles Trudeau or Charles Trudeau Laveau and Marguerite Henry d'Arcantel. So there is confusion with who her father was. The general consensus was that he was a multiracial, wealthy business owner. There are some accounts that say he was a plantation owner. And others that say he was the illegitimate son of a plantation owner. And I actually think that that is the most likely, and it would amount for confusion about like who he is because him and his father had the same name.
Mm.
So Charles and Marguerite were both free people of color. And before we go any further, I just want to talk about that term. So free person of color was a phrase used to describe someone who was of mixed race or multiracial and was either born free or had attained freedom from slavery. The terms mulatto and quadroon are thrown around a lot in my research, and I'm not going to use those words in this podcast, but just know that those are the words that are being used to describe. So I'm going to say multiracial. So usually a free person of color was a combination of European, Native American, and or African. Marguerite Marie's mother was a Choctaw Native American, African, and French, according to most sources. So this term was mainly used in the French colonies of Louisiana, Haiti, St. Lucia, Dominica, Guadalupe, and Martinique. The free people of color were different than freed African slaves, and they formed a third class between the white slave owners and the slaves. When French settlers first arrived in Louisiana in 1682, they took Native American women as concubines and wives, and then with the addition of the transatlantic slave trade, they began to take African slaves as their mistresses and common law wives. This practice became known as placage. It was an extra legal system, meaning basically it was not regulated by the law and was able to exist outside of it, where Europeans entered into civil unions with women of African, Native American, or mixed race descent. So the term placage in French means to place with. The mothers of the women of color generally arranged the dowry, which usually included freedom for the brides if they were enslaved and education for their children. Since the law did state that white people and people of color were not allowed to marry, the system afforded more security than other practices that were existing. But since it was extra legal, there still weren't legal rights.
And there's still a given protection for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a common thing to be in these like kind of common law marriages. But if the man died, then there was no protection for the woman.
It also sounds at all. It sounds kind of like ripe for abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So free people of color typically spoke French and followed a Catholic religion. They were allowed to own businesses and houses and be in the military. But I didn't look into it. I think that probably might have changed with the Louisiana Purchase. So before we continue, Creole is a term used to describe someone of European descent that was born in French colonies. And Louisiana Creole refers to someone who was born specifically in Louisiana. The language Creole is a pidgin language, basically a combination between African and French with some Spanish mixed in as well. That came from the merging of African and French cultures, which I actually didn't know that.
That it must sound really cool.
I know. I think so too.
I get so jealous of anyone who can speak another language.
I know. I only know a couple words in Spanish.
I was like I actually went all the way up to Spanish lit, but I haven't practiced it in years.
I did too. And yeah. I like almost failed out. Okay, so Marie was the first free-born person in her family. Her great-grandmother Marguerite, and I'm going to call her Marguerite One, since Marguerite's since Marie's mother was also named Marguerite, and I got really confused writing this last night, had been brought to New Orleans from Senegal in the mid-18th century. Marguerite One and her daughter Catherine, who was Marie's grandmother, were slaves to a plantation owner named Henry Roche Belair. Catherine's father was most likely, so Catherine is the grandmother of Marie, was most likely a black man or a mixed-race black man who was a slave as well, and the slave owner, Henry, was most likely the father of Catherine's children. Catherine was sold to several other slave owners, and she was able to buy her freedom in 1795, and she changed her name to Catherine Henry and built a house on St. Anne Street. Slaves in New Orleans were allowed to buy their freedom. Code Noir granted them Sundays and holidays off, so they generally spent this time like laboring or making goods to sell to market so they could save up to purchase their freedom.
So they really didn't get a day off.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about it a little bit later, because it was kind of this common like Sundays where there was a common like marketplace where everyone went, and it was like kind of a safe space on that day.
Okay.
For everyone to go to. Of course it's not good, but you know, it was like a space for them to sell their stuff, and like they were able to practice voodoo and do some like ceremonies. And yeah, Catherine and her daughter Marguerite too, who I'm just going to refer to as Marguerite, but is Marie's mother. And they'd been separated, and Marguerite had been freed several years earlier and become a mistress or concubine to a French man named Henri d'Arcantel. I believe this may have been a placard situation,
mm-hmm.
because Marguerite changed her last name from Henry to d'Arcantel.
Mm.
She was not as attached to this man as she would have been in a common law marriage situation, because she was with another man. This man was not Marie's father. So at some point, she had a relationship or an affair with Charles Laveau, and Marie was born. I'm not sure like what their relationship was like, and some accounts say that Marguerite left Marie with Catherine, the grandmother, and returned to her relationship with Henri. While accounts differ about who Marie grew up with, there's basically no information about the time that from the time she is born and the time she turns 18.
Isn't that so crazy when you find that? Like, and I know it's like really common, obviously, the further back we go in history, but like literally to like have these huge gaps of knowledge where we don't know anything about someone. It's like mm-hmm. almost inconceivable today.
Yeah, especially someone so famous.
Oh my gosh, she's so famous or infamous.
I know.
However you want to look at it. Yeah.
Infamous, yeah. Yeah, so some said she grew up with her grandmother, which I think is, I think that is what happened. So others said that she grew up with her father, but those also said were the ones that were saying he was a plantation owner and she grew up on a plantation. I don't know. I think she grew up in her grandmother's house. When her grandmother died, she ended up purchasing her grandmother's house. So I think that they like had a close relationship. There's also stories that her grandmother knew voodoo and taught it to her. So that's what I think happened. So her father, I don't know what kind of relationship that she had with him, but he was on her like birth certificate. He was legally her father, and he gave her away at her wedding. So they must have had some kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Most stories tend to reconvene on August 4th, 1819, when she got married. So she was either 18 or 25, depending on when she was born. Mm-hmm. Again, I think she was born in 1801, so I think she was 18. She married a man named Jacques Perry, also known as Jacques Santiago, and he was French.
You don't say. You don't say.
He was Haitian, but okay. French influenced a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a free man of color who was a refugee from the Haitian Revolution. And really quickly, I'm going to go give you a brief summary of the Haitian Revolution.
Yeah, please. I was just about to ask you about that.
Yeah, it's really interesting, but really, really long, because it went on for a really long time. And so I'm just going to give you the Cliff Notes version. So at the time of our story, modern day Haiti was a French colony known as Saint-Dominique. The Caribbean was one of the world's largest source of crops and produced the majority of the sugarcane and coffee for the world. One in 25 people living in France directly depended on the profits from the sugar trade, and even a larger percentage profited from it non-directly.
What?
Yeah.
That's so
they
crazy.
Said it was like, I know. So the process of producing sugar from sugarcane involves extremely intensive manual labor. So slaves were used because, of course, the white slave owners didn't want to do any labor themselves.
Or pay a fair wage.
Yes, of course. And they became integral to the trade of these resources. So the Haitian Revolution started in 1791 and continued until 1804. So it lasted for 13 years. It was the longest slave uprising since the failed Spartacus uprising hundreds of years before, and it was the most successful as was the only slave uprising that resulted in the freeing of the slaves and the departure of the oppressors from a land that was now ruled by people of color.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Like, I really want to learn more about that.
It's really interesting. Like, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
After the French Revolution, the Declaration of the Rights of Man stated that every man should be free. This, of course, didn't apply to the slaves, and there was some conflict between the white slave owners wanting freedom from the French First Republic and the slaves of St. Dominique fearing that the freedom from the French would mean harsher treatment for them.
Wow.
Coupled with their...
Super complicated.
Yes. So coupled with the refusal of basic human rights, they revolted. The Spanish, British, and French were all involved, and Napoleon sent his troops in at the beginning of the 1800s. It became a brutal and bloody war, and the Haitians burned the land, murdered the French, and left the corpses out in the sun to, like, shock them and get them to kind of, like, turn away instead of going back into slavery. Because slavery had been abolished in, like, 1793, but they were still fighting because they didn't really trust them. And then when the French invaded, they wanted to put them back to be slaves.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, who can blame them?
No, I mean, today still it's like a rallying cry, like, among everyone, even conservatives, for, like, topics that don't need this rallying cry. But it's like, do it for your freedom. It's like, freedom is so highly valued. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So honestly, I was like, I mean, who could blame them? Like, they had been freed and then they've been fighting and then they were like, yeah, we're going to make you slaves. And they were like, basically, no.
And honestly, like, we also, like, this is a time too to talk about, like, okay, we call these people colonizers and they're doing this, you know, Napoleon's doing it for the wealth of France and the glory of France. But I think that today,
and damn everyone else.
We call that terrorism. I think we'd call what he's doing is terrorism. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Okay. So, well, and Napoleon sent in about 60,000 troops and 35,000 to 40,000 of them died from yellow fever.
What?
Yes. So they...
Oh my God. That's like
an upstate
amount.
I know. And they... So they left. And the Haitians eventually won. And Napoleon was just like, oh, fuck. All right. I'm going to get rid of Louisiana, too, while I'm at it. So, yeah, the yellow fever was a big problem for the white colonists. And I feel like it's kind of karma of, like, you're trying to take over another. Like, obviously, like, any death is bad. But you, like, go into another country and then, I don't know.
Try to impose your own rule and your own ideologies. And these people couldn't be more different from you. And they already have their own set of ideologies and culture and religions, and they are an incredibly complex culture, just like, you know, France was. And it's like, you can't impose your own ideologies on them. You can't, you know, try to rule them. You can't try to force them into slavery. No, they deserved it.
So they retreated and the Haitians eventually won. So at this time and after this time, there's a lot of refugees to Louisiana, specifically of mixed race, so like multiracial. And I believe it was because, you know, we talked about them being like a third class. So I think that they were kind of also on the bad side of, or on the other side of the Haitian slaves, because free people of color did also commonly own slaves.
Really?
Which I was kind of surprised about. So, you know, and understandably, you know, the slaves were revolting against anyone who owned slaves. So there were a lot of free people of color coming to Louisiana. And so they brought new aspects of voodoo with them, along with an unease by the white slave owners being like, oh, no, you know, worrying that the revolt would start.
Just like how typical white conservatives act about, you know, people claiming asylum in the U.S. today.
Yep. So the revolution actually started with a voodoo ceremony involving an animal sacrifice, and white slave owners attached these images along with those of the brutal massacre in Haiti to the refugees who are now arriving in New Orleans, which only served to create further unease, greater tension between the races, and a solidification of an attachment to people of color to animalistic tendencies. And I was honestly like, I do see a difference, because I think that the Haitian people honestly had more reason, but like the American Revolution had just happened like 20 years ago. So it's like the Haitian Revolution, of course, they're revolting against slavery. But it's like we were like.
You feel like there would have been like more sympathy for their cause and these people, right? Is that what you're trying to say too?
I think it's like the same thing as like people out there protesting, like, my body, my choice. I don't have to wear a mask. When at the same time, when we're saying it's my body, my choice, a woman, they're like, no, 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 it's ours. You know, I think it's like the same thing. It's like someone has a different viewpoint. It's like, no, no, you're wrong. And then when it comes to it, they use the same phrasing.
They appropriate the same phrasing and the same mottos for their own car.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's like easy for them to see the Haitian slaves who did the uprising as like terrible, like mass murders. When it was like, look, you have been enslaving these people for hundreds of years and treating them like less than humans. Of course they're going to revolt. And you guys did the same thing 20 years ago over tea. So like, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Anyway, so this is where Jacques Perry came in. He and Marie married in 1819 and they had two children, Félicité, who was born in 1817. So 2 years before they got married. But again, like that was pretty common. And Angela, who was born in 1820, I believe. Again, like dates are kind of weird. So sometime between 1820 and 1824, like Jacques and the two girls disappeared from records.
What?
So some sources say that it was around 1820. Others say 1824. I think 1824 is the one I saw more often. But either way, it was like a couple years after their marriage. There was no records of their death, but Jacques was declared dead by Marie and she began to be known as the widow Perry. So there's no record of the girl's death, but honestly, the death rates for children at this time were extremely high. Given all the diseases, it was like difficult for children to make it into adulthood. Mm-hmm. And it's most likely that the deaths weren't, I assume that just not reported out of, you know,
And they probably happened in the first couple of years of their lives, in all honesty. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, she was young. There were her firstborn daughters. And it's possible that Jacques left with the girls, but I don't really believe that. So who knows? But many of her future children did not survive into adulthood. So honestly, I think the deaths are probably the most likely. And, you know, yellow fever was really common. And we're going to talk about yellow fever in just a second. But you know, there's like mass graves. Bodies were just being like left on the side of roads and stuff. Like, yeah. So, you know, and yeah.
Yeah.
So sometime later, I believe in 1826, she entered into a domestic partnership or passage with Christophe Dominique Dumini de Glapion, I think. It was a wealthy white Frenchman. And they had a lot of children. Most sources say they had seven. There are like really only records of seven, but there are also rumors that they had up to 15. Those 15 could have been grandchildren or nieces and nephews or even orphan children, that's known that Marie would take in orphan children or at least one. I bet she would take in people all the time. So out of the seven children, only two survived into adulthood. Marie Eucharist Eloise Laveau and Marie Philomène Glampion, who is usually believed to be Marie too. And we'll talk a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. So, hold on. Wetting my whistle. So Marie and Christophe were not allowed to be legally married because she was a person of color and he was a white man. But in every other sense of the word, they were married. So I'm going to refer to him as her husband if we talk about him from now on. You know, they were domestic partners and they were together for 30 years.
What?
Yeah. So this is, you know, and there's no record of her being with anyone else after this, even though she survived him by 25 years. So he died. So it was like death do us part, death do them part. So mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that they had, I imagine they had like a great love. Like that's a long time, 30 years.
It's almost unimaginable as I'm coming up on my 3-year wedding anniversary.
I know. Well, my parents are almost on their 40 year.
Yeah, my mom and dad just celebrated their 30th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Well, 3 years is a long time.
I mean, we've been together for 5, but yeah, three years is a long
time.
We had two kids in that time.
You did. You had a lot going on. So, okay, real quick, yellow fever.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was killing a lot of people at the time. So it's a viral hemorrhagic disease that causes fever, chills, loss of appetite, nausea, muscle pains, and headaches. So basically, it's COVID-19. It is spread by the bite of an infected female mosquito, and it began in Africa in non-human primates, and it became endemic to Africa and tropical climates like Haiti, which basically means that just targeted a specific group of people, and it kind of just always stayed around. So like endemic was referenced to chickenpox and school children. You know, it's kind of always there. And it
targets, yeah.
Being endemic in Africa, most Africans were able to develop acquired immunity. So if they fell sick, they had mild flu symptoms. But when the slave trade began, Europeans started dying off by the thousands since they had never been exposed to it before. And it quickly spread to the territories and colonies around the world. Also, at this time, doctors thought that bleeding people was the cure for everything. And as you can imagine, it doesn't work for any disease, and especially not a hemorrhagic one.
Oh, my God.
Right?
I didn't even... killing them even faster.
I didn't even make that connection until, like, I was almost done, and I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, because, I mean, so in hemorrhagic disease, it causes the blood cells to be damaged, which affects clotting factors. I think Mayans, I believe, called it, like, blood vomit.
Oh.
And so, yeah. And can you imagine, like, having your blood drained when your blood doesn't clot? Yeah. And it's transmitted by mosquitoes who thrive in humid environments. So it's especially prevalent in the tropics and in humid climates such as the southern United States. There were multiple epidemics throughout the 17th and 20th centuries until it was largely eradicated in places with larvicides, sopapods, which are larvae-eating fish, and insecticide.
Another way that science saved us from an epidemic.
I know. That's one of the big things that was happening in New Orleans at the time. And yellow fever was really prevalent in the area. Marie's grandmother died in 1831, and her house was put up for auction. So Marie's husband was able to buy the house for them, and they lived there until his death. When he died in 1855, it was seized by the banks, and Marie and her daughter were only allowed to stay in the house because a friend had bought it. So in the podcast I listened to, History Chicks, they mentioned that her husband had sold the house to a black friend because there was no transfer of property allowed between white men and black women or men. So he was kind of trying to, like, circumvent that in case he died, to sell it to a black man so that, like, they could transfer the property.
Oh.
But they still had a mortgage, and she still had a mortgage and stuff that she had to pay. Like, a lot of people believe that she was, like, a wealthy con woman, and she actually really didn't have very much money. And her husband, while wealthy, he really wasn't very good with money, which is, like, one of the reasons that the house was seized upon his death. So she started a beauty parlor, and she dressed the hair of both wealthy white women and black clients, usually house servants. Her salon was full of juicy gossip from all parts of New Orleans, and soon she knew everything about everybody. She was able to use this knowledge to help people, and many believe that her extensive knowledge was an association with a higher power. Many began to pay her for protection from evil or advice about everything from birth, marriage, legal issues, finances, you name it. In The Birth of New Orleans Voodoo Queen, A Long-Held Mystery Resolved, Ina J. Fanditch says, quote, "Everybody in trouble of any sort seems to have sought her help. Women and men, black and white, enslaved and free, the rich and famous, and the poor and unknown alike. Rumors have it that all of the city's leading politicians, wealthy planters, lawyers, and businessmen consulted with her secretly before making any major decision, as everyone in the Crescent City appears to have been convinced that whatever the Voodoo Queen predicted would unfailingly come true." End quote.
Okay. So she pretty much was just, like, a really wise and big part in her community.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, she was. And she helped a lot of people too. Like, we'll talk about it, but she was just very altruistic, and she was doing a lot to help people. And, you know, she gets this really bad rap, but I think that a lot of that, and we're going to talk about voodoo next, but I think a lot of that comes from, like, this association with voodoo as being evil. That kind of came from, like, white supremacy and, like, othering and thinking of, like, these other religions as, like, exotic. And
they also, you know, like, pretty much, like, try to connect voodoo to witchcraft, right?
Yeah.
Satanism. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get to it. Okay, voodoo. So I'm mostly going to be talking about Louisiana voodoo. So it's different from other voodoos, and it sort of became, like, a melting pot of religions. It gained influence from Africa, Catholicism, and even Native American spiritualism. It comes from spiritual practices in Dahomey, which is now it's called Benin in West Africa. During the transatlantic slave trade, Africans were transported from all over the continent to places all around the world. In the 1700s, slaves outnamed Europeans 2-1. And in New Orleans, families weren't separated as frequently as in other colonies. So the languages and cultures were a little bit more, like, preserved between groups. And it's commonplace practice in a lot of other places for children to be sold away from parents. And there's actually a law in New Orleans that slaves under 14 were not allowed to be sold away from their parents. In the Voodoo Hoodoo Handbook, Dennis Alvardo asserts that the Louisiana voodoo became Creolized, as many slave owners outlaw. So basically, that's just, like, African, a bunch of religions, like African and Catholicism kind of merging, outlawed voodoo and forced slaves to convert to Catholicism. And thus many of the deities in voodoo took on Christian names, and voodoo was allowed to continue as it more closely resembled Catholicism, and it could kind of, like, hide under that guise a little bit. So it's the only Afro-Catholic religion in North America. You will find a lot of similarities between Catholicism and voodoo, especially in the saints. For example, Legba in voodoo is the spirit who controls the gates to heaven, and that's just Saint Peter in Catholicism. And Marie Laveau was actually Catholic, and she attended Mass regularly, and her children were baptized Catholic. The core of voodoo is spirituality and healing, and many of the beliefs are centered around connections to the spirits. The followers believe that there is one supreme God and many spirits, or Loa, who are responsible for everyday life. They can be reached through dance, music, chanting,
and offerings.
Yeah, music and songs are very important and are only passed down orally and give descriptions of the spirits and their strengths, names, likes, etc. So songs can be added to repetition by one of two ways, either if someone heard the song in a dream or if someone is in a possessed trance and starts singing. Both of these are considered to be signs from a spirit, and songs are seen to help open the gate to the spirit world and invite possession. Alvardo states that New Orleans voodoo evolved from such influence as voodooism, Catholicism, spiritualism, and Pentecostalism. New Orleans voodoo differs specifically from voodoo of other regions because it incorporates items such as gree-gree, dolls, and zombies. So gree-gree is they're bags of herbal or magical substances that can include a variety of items. They get their name from the African Gregory's bags, which are blessed for magical protection and power. And gris in French means gray. So gray symbolizes the in-between world or the spiritual world between black and white, but then the living.
Cool.
An article I read, An article I read pointed out that these totems are not that different than rosaries or totems of saints.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. So dolls are used as talisman magic, and the dolls usually represent a spirit, as opposed to our common misconception that they are used to harm people. So obviously with this, like, there are, of course, like, evil practitioners of voodoo.
I mean, but, just like there are in like, any obviously, religion.
You'll find that anywhere. So Alvardo claims that 90% of voodoo priests and priestesses use voodoo for good and not for revenge or evil. Voodoo was often used to help cure anxiety, depression, hunger, loneliness, sickness, and poverty.
Really?
Okay, so
it was like a psychological and sociological religion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you may be thinking, hold on, that doesn't sound like the evil, pinpricky, scary religion that has become synonymous with voodoo. Well, you're right. It's not, because voodoo is not evil. There are, of course, some practitioners, but at its core, it's meant for protection and healing. There are several reasons that voodoo is portrayed the way it is. Many have to do with white supremacy association with people of color is animalistic. And one specific example, as we talked about, can be seen in the Haitian Revolution. It began with a voodoo ceremony that included sacrificing a pig and a blood oath to drive the French out. This terrified white slave owners in Louisiana, who were, like, they're already, you know, generally just scared of slaves revolting in general.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the large influx of Haitian refugees who brought beliefs and rituals from voodoo with them. They're scared not only of the religion, but of the powerful women of color who were the head of the largely matriarchal religion. So it's a perfect marriage of patriarchy and white supremacy. And midnight scenes and orgies, public narratives of voodoo and New Orleans and 19th century discourses of white supremacy. Michelle Y. Gordon points out that the newspapers describe voodoo as negative and spread sensationalist rumors of zombies, sacrifices, and evil spirits. This led to exotification and othering and helped criminalize the black man, painting him as an animalistic, primitive rapist. This idea helped create a system of, quote, mass incarceration, labor exploitation, and regulation of female sexuality, end quote.
Jeez.
I know.
That's just so heavy. Sorry. Yes.
I know. So we are really seeing a juxtaposition between what they thought was the, quote, civilized white communities and, quote, uncivilized black communities. Again, that's white supremacy terms.
Mm-hmm.
So these ideas, of course, have been continued in the media. In 1932, the movie White Zombie was released, and I have a picture. That's I think it's like the second one down, if you can see it. It's so stupid.
Yeah, it's just taking a while to load.
Okay, it's okay. Let me know when you get there. It's about an evil voodoo master named Murder.
Who plays? It's the cover of a movie.
Yeah, it's the second picture.
Oh, hold on, I missed it. I just saw it. It looks hilarious.
I know.
Oh my gosh, what?
I know. It's like, yeah, with those zombie eyes, he held her.
So is the origin of zombie from voodoo, though?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I believe so. Yes, because it is in there. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So, yeah, I'll get to it. And so in 1932, it was released. So it's about an evil voodoo master named Murder Legendre, which is just like...
So original.
Yeah, you guys couldn't have like branched out a little bit. So the guy, I have the picture of the first guy that's on there. He's the same guy who plays Dracula. So obviously like he's really good at being like a supernatural villain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first feature-length zombie film, and it was a model for all zombie movies after it. Basically, Murder owns a sugar mill that's run exclusively by zombies. And the plantation owner, who is in love with an engaged woman, asks Murder to murder her and turn her into a zombie. Everyone dies at the end by, like, falling off cliffs. And then she magically comes back to life and hugs her lover, and that's the end. So, yeah.
Sounds like a really tight plot.
I know. And Rob Zombie actually got, like, took his name from this movie that he really liked.
Really?
So, yeah. Even I was telling Matt about that, and he was like... Oh, is Rob Zombie? Rob Zombie? I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, his name used to be White Zombie before he changed it.
That's right. So, yeah. It did. And he was
like,
that.
Yeah. And he, I guess, like loved horror films and stuff. So the James Bond movie Live and Let Die helped to perpetrate the image of evil voodoo with shrunken heads and poison darts. We even see this in American Horror Story, Coven. And I really did try to watch it because I know you've been telling me to watch it for years. And you know how obsessed I am with witches. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't even get past the first 5 minutes because I can't watch horror films.
Oh, so. But also, I watched it again, like, years later. And Coven is not my favorite season by a mile.
Yeah. I couldn't get past the first 5 minutes. The first 5 minutes were just, like, really over-the-top, like, torture scenes. And I was like, well, not the most over-the-top thing I've ever seen in my life, but... I just like, ugh, I don't know. When people's mouths get sewn shut, it literally makes me sick and I can't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't. And then I was like, I want to try to get through the first episode because I want to see how they portray Marie Laveau. And then I got like another 5 minutes in and then she was like walking down the scary house. I was like, I can't do this.
So I'm going to go watch tell you the really CW quick, show. Marie Laveau is very much like portrayed as all the stereotypical kind of things that you would think as a voodoo woman, but she's portrayed as a very strong black woman in her community and that she never dies. So she's like still okay. Living in today.
So actually I found some quotes from this. I really want to read this. It's called "There's Nothing I Hate More Than a Racist: Recentering Whiteness in American Horror Story, Coven." By Amanda K. LeBlanc. Yeah, I think it's like a dissertation. I really want to read it. Sounds really interesting. So, quote, "In Coven, the black women are portrayed as feminine and certainly sexual, but unlike their white counterparts, femininity and sexuality become attached to their wild animalness." And then another quote, "Throughout the season, Laveau and Queenie's connection to the Minotaur is their only sexual and romantic relationship."
Mm-hmm.
End quote. Yeah. So that was a really, of course I didn't watch it. So
no, honestly though, that like gives, like there's, like I said, it's not my favorite season by a long mile mm-hmm. because there was something distasteful to me there. It's just really hard to like pinpoint what it is. And it's the only season that I don't rewatch.
Mm-hmm. I can't watch, I just don't like horror films. I always try because I'm always like, oh, it's like I love Halloween so much. And I'm like, I love witches and magic. And I like just love it, but I have to just stick to like Charmed and stuff.
I love creepy things.
I love like light creepy things. Okay, so yeah, that I thought that was a really
that's very interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after the release of White Zombie, voodoo was attached to the familiar relics of sticking pins on dolls and placing hexes on people. And New Orleans was becoming a tourist destination. And so a lot of people exported these images and helped to cement the image that we know today. Also, Zombie, Z-O-M-B-I, is the name of a deity in voodoo. And I think that could maybe be where the confusion with like zombies came in. Alvarado states that zombies are actually just living beings that are under the influence of drugs, usually from an evil source. So when you think of like zombies, they're kind of controlled by, controlled by their hunger for brains or whatever, but in this sense I think zombies are controlled like by like an evil sorcerer.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that is commonly confused with voodoo is hoodoo, and I've heard it called low country voodoo, but also I saw like there's a couple different things about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the common conceptions and superstitions we have about voodoo are actually represented by hoodoo a lot of the times, and that's traditional African-American folk magic. Alvarado claims that, quote, "Voodoo was the religion, hoodoo was the magic. yet there's an overlap of the two most of the time, end quote. So if that makes sense, like voodoo, those can kind of be like interchangeable. Yeah. Voodoo is like the religion. And then hoodoo. So the purpose of hoodoo is to allow those practicing to harness powers to live a better life. So it involves more rituals and spells. I mean, they both kind of do, but voodoo is more like protection spells and stuff. And it's more connection to spiritual. And hoodoo, it's like trying to harness powers for life. So specifically,
so it sounds like voodoo is more like defensive and hoodoo is more offensive.
Yeah, a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Voodoo or hoodoo involves rituals and spells and sometimes involves bodily fluid and use of spells like blood, semen, or even hair. So sympathetic magic is used quite frequently, which like it's using an object. So that's where you get the pins and dolls. But again, it's not generally used for evil. And I actually read somewhere that sometimes they're used to pin like a picture or a name to the doll. The spells are usually performed to gain. And then also read that the dolls usually symbolize spirits.
Okay.
And so, yeah. So they're not used like, I'm sure some people made, but that like whole picking the print of the doll to like hurt someone, like that's not like, that's not a common thing. I think that's a misconception.
And honestly, do you know another thing that I had a problem with in American Horror Story Coven is that Queenie, who's like,
I read about her.
Her power is that she is a human.
Hurts other
doll.
People, right?
Well, mm-hmm. She can like put her hand in like a boiling thing of like hot liquid. And then
I read that.
Then it burns.
And she hurts other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just like the fact that she's like a human voodoo doll is kind of, I don't know.
Yeah. I know what you mean. The spells are usually performed to gain control of love, power and domination, luck and finance, and uncrossing. So crossing brings harm or bad luck, and uncrossing just like reverses that spell.
Okay.
Okay. So that's your quick little rundown on voodoo. I hope I was able to shed some light. I mean, there's a lot going in this book that I was able to look at. It was really, really interesting. And I want to read the whole thing because it has like voodoo and hoodoo spells in it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was like, there was a lot of stuff. Again, if I said anything wrong or I'm not including anything, please let us know. And obviously too, like people have been scared of things that they don't understand for a long time. Like look at the Salem witch trials.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that like voodoo has really been a victim of patriarchal white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
So Marie is said to have studied voodoo under Dr. John Bayou, who's a Senegalese conjurer. It is also said that she could have studied under Senate or Dede, who were two voodoo priestesses, I believe. While she mainly operated out of her house on St. Anne Street. Oh, slurp. She also performed rituals in Congo Square and Lake Pontchartrain. So Marie's house had flowers, candles, images of saints on altars, and it was said she scrubbed the steps every day with brick dust to protect the house. So as we talked a little bit about earlier in the episode, Code Noir was gave Sundays and holidays off. And so a lot of people would sell their goods there, and that's where Congo Square came in. So that's the marketplace, and it was a safe space for those who were oppressed. And became, I believe it became a place where like the races mixed publicly as well. The lake, it's a really long lake, Pontchartrain, was out in the bayou, and that's where the big ceremonies, the singing, dancing, drumming, and spirit possession would take place. A lot of times, white people would spy on these ceremonies, and their accounts of what they witnessed were greatly exaggerated. So remember that they were also associating voodoo with a giant massacre, and of course, you know, not taking into account that the massacre was predated by hundreds of years of slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the big holidays in voodoo is St. John's Eve, which is basically Midsummer's Eve or summer solstice, which is celebrated in many religions. It's a very spiritual time accompanied by ritual bathing, sacred water with bonfires and merry celebrations. And Marie was known to have presided over these ceremonies as well. A newspaper article at the time said, and get ready to throw things, quote, June is the time devoted by the voodoo worshippers to the celebration of their most sacred and therefore most revolting rites.
Oh my God.
End quote. I know. And I just put like pause for discussion about how sacred is attributed to revolting. It's like, yeah.
No. Oh my, I can't even, we don't even need to talk about that. It's just so dumb.
Yeah. It's, yeah. John Kendall, who's a 20th century historian and expert on Marie Laveau, those were his words. He claimed he was an expert. He claims, quote, after dark, you might see carriages roll up to Marie's door and veiled ladies, elegantly attired, descend and hurry in to buy what the old witch had for sale. An errant fraud, no doubt, but money poured into her lap down to the last day of her evil life. end quote.
Because so, we all know that a white man can be an expert on unbiased. A woman.
Yeah, exactly. So he's clearly unbiased.
Clearly.
And yeah, I mean, that quote is not only dripping with prejudice, but it's like highly inaccurate. So not only was she not like an evil witch, she was also not rich. And she spent all what money she did have, she spent caring for her children along with the community as well. So she was a devout Catholic. She used what money and magic she had to help others. Not only was she baptized and attended mass regularly, she also had her children baptized at St. Louis, Louis Cathedral. She adopted orphans, and she paid for the education of at least one and took in children who needed it. She visited jails and administered Catholic rites to prisoners. She spent years nursing those afflicted with yellow fever with herbs, salves, tinctures, and teas, which, as you can imagine,
oh my gosh,
they're much more effective than bloodletting.
I know. Yeah, I can just imagine what people said about him too, like potions and magic. And
she was just a naturopath. Mm-hmm. Like that's what she was. And so she used her knowledge as well as the healing power of voodoo for good. It is worth mentioning here, and I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but she did own slaves. So I don't know, I've heard 2 in some places and 7 in others. And I don't know, what her relationships were like with those slaves. But it needs to be mentioned that she, she did own slaves as well. She died, Marie Catherine Laveau, Paris Glapion, on June 15th, 1881, peacefully in her home. She was most likely 79, but there are also different accounts of her birthday, so it's hard to tell. But still, that's pretty old for back then, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. In her obituary, she was praised as a healer and philanthropist who attended Catholic Mass and nursed those with yellow fever. And I believe she developed immunity to yellow fever, just being around it so often. Her funeral is a big event, and it was attended by many members of the community, including members of the white elite. So there is a rumor that Marie was seen after her funeral, and this goes into, we were talking about Coven, about, her surviving until later age. So it was most likely Marie, too, which is her younger daughter. She looked a lot like her, and she, there's a rumor that they kind of switched places at some point, and they just told people that Marie didn't age. So I don't know how true that is. But I if I have a daughter, I'm gonna do that.
Right? Oh my gosh.
You're gonna have to do that when you get old.
Well, we don't look that much alike, so.
Well, not now. You might. Who knows? The story with Marie too was that she was more quote unquote wicked. She was an entrepreneur and a proud free woman of color. She allegedly ran a bar full of, I read in one place, champagne and naked black women. She used the gossip she gained to make money and pretend she had powers. Again,
you don't know how true that is.
Yeah. Given how wishy-washy Marie One's life was, it's really not a far jump for us to believe that that was just gossip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's also a general consensus among sources that she was a bit more evil than her mom.
Mm-hmm.
But again, rumors.
She might have just been a bit more bold and brash than her mom, not evil.
Honestly, I honestly think that's what it was, because they were talking about how she kind of she was just such a proud, free black woman of color. And it's there's nothing wrong with that. And that doesn't mean anyone's evil.
Mm-hmm.
She should be proud.
Mm-hmm.
So, really quickly, I just wanted to give you an inkling of how far off these accounts go, because I read one last night from Atlas Obscura that she was born in 1827 and died in 1895. Drowning in a ritual, from a ritual.
Oh my God.
So, I know. I was like, what the? No. So she, and it said that she died very peacefully in her home because she was 80.
You're talking about Marie Laveau the First.
Yes. Yeah. Marie Laveau, number one, Marie One. So yeah, I mean, it just shows you how much myth there is that surrounds her. But I hope I was able to shed some light and bring a little bit of truth about Marie and voodoo. The end.
Yeah. I learned so much about voodoo and the Haitian Revolution.
It's so interesting.
Yeah, and it's really influential on American history. It is American history. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not the stuff that you get taught.
Learn
get
about taught in that. Our history books.
Yeah, all we get taught is that stupid tea party.
Oh my gosh. I just still to this day will not understand why we need to spend 5 months on the 1700s, for the Declaration of Independence and stuff and the American Revolution, but we rarely learn about anything else afterwards. And you remember civil rights took 1 week?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's the American Revolution, it jumps to the Civil War and nothing happens in between. And then and all the stuff you learn about.
Right.
Too.
2 weeks on Ronald Reagan, and you're like, really?
I know. I always hated going to American history because I was like, this is boring. Like, honestly, the American Tea Party, I'm sorry, it's so dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys just dumped a bunch of tea in the water, and you guys think you're huge revolutionaries.
In a sense, we were, I get why people really like praise the Tea Party, because we were freeing ourselves from colonizers, but also
but then we became colonizers.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Like, I was like, but at the same time, we were also colonizers. I don't know.
I'm not saying that like revolting, like I'm, you know, I mean, it would be cool to have a British accent, but I'm not saying that like the American Revolution wasn't whatever, but I just honestly, like, if you want freedom, I feel like you should have freedom for all. It's like this, you know, like if you're gonna have freedom from the British, then why are you still having slaves?
You can't have everyone's equal. You can't do separate but equal.
Yep, exactly. I keep getting mint leaves stuck in my straw. Okay, so really quickly, I'm going to run over my sources. So I have Britannica.com, GoCityTours.com, NewOrleans.com, HistoryOfVaccines.org, FrenchQuarter.com, VoodooNewOrleans.com, KnowledgeKnots.com, LearningReligions.com, 64Parishes.org, and the Voodoo Hoodoo Handbook by Dennis Alvardo, as well as Wikipedia. Okay, so that was spooky. It's like we're recording this in August and it's 95 degrees outside, but I'm like wearing jeans because I'm trying to feel like I'm in Halloween.
I'm just ready for it. I got all my haunted Halloween movies lined up. Oh my God. I'm ready.
Do you want to have like a haunted Halloween marathon over Skype? I really want to.
I was like only if you watch something really scary.
I'll watch It.
That's not scary.
It too. I was terrified. Okay. I walked home. Like when we used to live in Ballard, and I would walk home for 3 months after I watched that movie. I'd walk home at night. It was always raining because it's Seattle. And I'd walk home past the rain gutters and I would just sprint. It was always 11 at night. There was always like some creepy guy sitting next to me on the bus. And of course it was like Ballard, so nothing bad was happening, but I was terrified.
Yeah. No, it's gotta be scarier than that.
Okay, well, can we just watch Hocus Pocus together?
Well, yeah, Zelda loves that movie.
I know, and you watched it with me the first time. Remember, we had chicken dumpling soup?
It was so good. Yes. Yeah.
I know. Oh.
Okay. I know. When we were able to be together.
I know.
So what's your happy harlot?
My happy harlot is, so on Sunday, it was Matt's birthday, so we kept trying to do things, and they kept, like, weird things kept happening, like, and that they kept getting canceled and stuff. So we decided we were going to go stay at my parents, and like the air quality was so bad out here. And we were like going to go camp out there in the backyard because they were out of town. And so then on Sunday morning, we were like, we're going to go drive out to this like beautiful river and go in the swimming hole. So we drove out. It was like a 2-hour drive. We got there and there was a really big accident. So we were stuck on this like really small 2-lane path, and I had to turn around, and every time I turned, I was like, we waited for like 30 minutes and we're like, okay, we're not gonna wait because I think it's gonna be longer than an hour. And every time I tried to turn around, I was like doing my 3-point turn because it was a really, really narrow road.
Yeah.
And every time I did it, like there was like an ambulance or a cop car that came. So I was like in the middle of the 3-point turn. Then I had to like reverse and back, and it happened like 2 times. So we drove back, and like I think Matt was kind of disappointed, but it was a really pretty drive. It was like 2 hours. We went through the mountains. We saw these like amazing red rocks, and like the river was really pretty, and it was like a hot day. We just like opened the sunroof and got to, it was really nice. And then we ended up kind of like stumbling upon red rocks, and neither of us had ever been there. And I actually thought it was farther away. But so we just like walked around. We saw this really cool drum circle, and there were all these people like working out there. It was like 100 degrees. It was so hot. They were running up and down the stairs on one leg, doing hops with one leg up and down these like stairs. And I was dying walking up.
You were like,
because we walked a little bit to the bottom.
Sweating just looking at them.
I was. And I walked up to the top. And I don't think I made it. I was like, wow, I really need to work out. But yeah, and then we came home. But it was just really nice. I mean, it was like, you know, we didn't get to do the thing we wanted to do, but we got this like really nice drive. And, you know, we packed a picnic and stuff. So we just ended up eating our stuff in the car. But it was just nice. It was really pretty. And we saw some parts of the state that like I'd never seen before. And I grew up here. And yeah, it was nice.
That sounds so nice. I know. I really want to come visit.
You should.
My happy harlot was this week And I actually floated down my first river. And
I love the river. It's so fun.
It was actually really fun. It was a bit too slow pace for me.
Really slow there.
Need something to do always. But it was really funny because my husband can't swim and he definitely flipped over twice.
He can't swim?
No, he can't swim. He can barely doggy paddle, but yet he loves to scuba dive. I'm like,
you don't really need to swim with scuba diving because you have like the flippers and stuff. You just kind of float.
But like he won't go where it's over his head.
Scuba diving?
No, just swimming.
Oh, I was like, you have to. Oh, okay.
Yeah. He won't go where it's over his head.
That's understandable. I wouldn't either.
I mean, I love swimming, so I'm always like the one swimming far out.
Did you guys go one time? I went floating on that river and there's like that huge tree branch that you jump off.
Yeah. People are doing that. And
did you jump off that?
No, because some girl like did a belly flop on the branch. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to hop back in my tube and go. It was traumatic to watch.
Yeah. Everyone's like drunk out there too. So
yeah, a lot of room, all that. Yep. A lot of room.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that sounds fun though.
Right. It was really fun. It'd been more fun if you were there with me.
And next summer, I know I'm bummed because I was supposed to be in Seattle tomorrow.
I know. But
because of the COVID. I know. But it's okay. We'll see each other at some point. All right. Well, thank you for joining us for our first episode of Spooky Harlots.
We're taking back the word harlot.
One episode at a time. So be a harlot.
Not a hater. Goodbye.
Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Our music is by Lloyd Rogers, and our cover art and our editing is by us. If you enjoyed listening, we would be tickled if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can always email us at harlotsofhistorypodcast@gmail.com. We will do our best to respond with something cute, snarky, or boring. We are also on Instagram and Twitter as Harlots of History. We love you all, even the haters. Bye!